I don't know if that was Ron's mistake or mine. I typed the numbers and I probably misheard and put the wrong one. The good news is we have the books. We can sing any song in the book that we want to. And we appreciate you enjoying and getting along with us on that. I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I've started making yearly trips to China with my good friend and brother Wilson Copeland. We have made our arrangements that we will be leaving for China on April 5th, and we will be gone almost the whole month of April. When I first started going with Wilson to do this, I talked it over with the elders, and one of the things that I feel strongly about was I just wanted to allow any of you that wanted to have partnership, fellowship, joint in this, if you would like to just make a personal contribution to that, I would be glad to use whatever you have. We are going to be traveling a little bit more this year than we have in years past. We have brethren in Beijing that we want to see. We have found a group of brethren about an hour south of Beijing that we're going to spend a couple of days with. We know of some families that have asked us to come. Their families are interested in hearing the gospel, have even mentioned that they are strongly thinking about being baptized and becoming Christians. So that will be up north of Beijing. The brethren in Shanghai have pleaded with us. They want us to come and spend some time again with them. But there's at least two different groups we know in Shanghai, so we'll probably split our time there. We will go back down to the island south of China, where our good friends David and Allie are. And we are pretty convinced that at least one of the young ladies there will obey the gospel when we spend a little time with her. Many of the students we've made down on the island have now graduated from the university, and they moved over to Shenzhen, which is the big Chinese city just north of Hong Kong. It was a little bitty village about 25 years ago, and it is now a city of approximately 15 million people. And we know 10. So we got plenty of people we want to talk to if we can just find the time. But what that means is that we're just going to spend less days at any one particular place and trying to do this. I've been encouraged. Brother Wilson has been able to arrange his schedule and his agreement with the church where he is. He is going to begin making two trips a year. I haven't decided whether I even want to try to join him on that or not. I'm going to go in April, and we're going to do what we can. Looking forward to being gone from you. The work is exciting. I told somebody when they asked me about this, I said, the saddest part of my preaching career is that I didn't get involved in this type of work when I was 29. I wished all of the years that I've been working with you that we could have also been working with people across the world. The gospel needs to be spread to all creation. And so that's what we're planning on doing. Anyway, it'll be April 5th when we finally leave here. Interesting reading this morning from Ecclesiastes. Fascinating from many different standpoints. I know we just read it, but Jim read out of a different translation. I want to reread those verses for you, but I'm going to read out of the English Standard Version this morning. Starting at verse 10. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. What advantage has their owner except to see them with his eyes? Sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much. But the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep. There is a grievous evil that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owner to his hurt. And those riches were lost in a bad venture. And he is the father of his son, but he has nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, he shall go again. Naked as he came, he shall take nothing for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. This is a grievous evil. Just as he came, so shall he go. What gain is there then to him who toils for the wind? Moreover, all his days he eats in darkness, in much vexation, in sickness, and in anger. Behold, this is what I have seen to be good and fitting, is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun the few days of his life that God has given him. For this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possession and power to enjoy them, to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is the gift of God. For he will not much remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with the joy in his heart. As I have mentioned as we've been reading through Ecclesiastes, it is a strange and wonderful book. Strange in the sense that the writer of Ecclesiastes set out to simply figure out what life was all about. And rather than turning to the revelation of God, instead of turning to the Word of God, he's kind of like a four-year-old. I will do this myself. And so he sets out and he just begins looking at life. And he sits back and he watches people like you and me and just sees, how does that work? How does that fit in their life? And as you begin reading this, one of the things that pops up, even though he's going to figure this out, apart from God telling him what it is, the book is filled with God. He cannot get away from the concept of God. Everywhere he turns, what he sees as he looks at life is not a godless world, but he sees people ignoring God, but he sees God active, involved in all manner of life. And what he finally decides is, we need to acknowledge God is there in everything we do, in everything we say, every endeavor of life that we have. God will be involved in that, and God will bring us to judgment. Now, having said that, this chapter, he sits back and he looks at people that have money. Now, I'm going to tell you, number one, we are the richest country on the face of the earth that ever has been. Number two, I don't want you to feel guilty. I want you to feel encouraged to use your money the way God intends you to use it. Number three, when the writer of this book looks at those that had money, did you see that three times at the end of this chapter, he talked about this is a gift of God, a gift of God. This is his lot in life that God has given him in this. God given us our life, all of the days of his life which God has given him, said the writer. And so, you and I are here because God allows us to be here. In Him, we live and we move and we have our very being. And all of the abilities that we have. The writer in Deuteronomy, Moses, said, God gives you the power, the ability to work, to get riches. So even when we've worked and we've struggled and we've invested wisely and we have saved and we have all of this money, we can't step back and say, I did this all by myself. For we didn't do it by ourselves. God was involved. Even if it was nothing more than God allowed you the breath of life to live another day, that God gave you the ability to think and to reason, that God gave you the ability to work, to go to work, that God gave you the opportunity to have a job. When we arise in the morning and we open our eyes and we see there's a roof over our head, we give thanks. When we get up and we open the refrigerator and we have to choose which of the foods in the refrigerator we're going to eat. When we can open the cupboard and we can decide which one we're going to eat. God has blessed us, and so what we ought to do is give thanks unto God. And the writer of Ecclesiastes saw that. And so he talked about this is the gift of God. But coming back to his purpose, when he talked about what is the very purpose then of life, acknowledging that God is there and God allows us to live and God gives us whatever we have, the writer of Ecclesiastes still said, this is life. That you learn to enjoy the labor that you have. Don't care what job you have. You need a job. You need a job so that you can be occupied in life. And God has given us this. And we are to be occupied in that. But what we begin seeing is, it's not that we live for the job. We live. And so we begin taking interest in our work. We begin enjoying what we're doing. We do the best we can because this is what God has allowed us to do. And when we approach work that way, it changes our attitude towards the boss, towards the economy, towards our family, towards the amount of hours that we work. We don't just work. That's not life. But we learn to enjoy the labor as a very gift from God that we can put our time together in this. But then he goes back. And he says, you know, if you don't look at it that way, I've noticed something else. Those that love money will never be satisfied with money. Those that have money problems, money usually doesn't solve it. Because usually the problem we have with money is not money. It's greed, foolishness, selfishness. And so he begins looking at money and he said, the problem with having money is that money doesn't satisfy. I'm always amazed, you know, no matter how much we have, almost every one of us wants just a little more. And we begin thinking, if I had just a little more, then I would be happy. And the writer of Ecclesiastes says, it doesn't work that way. And if you put your love into money and into things and to worldly stuff, it will never satisfy you. One of the things that he mentions here is, for example, what happens when you make a bad investment? Now, some people are very gifted. But as gifted as you are, if the stock market crashes, you're in trouble like everybody else. And as we begin looking at life, we oftentimes make investments thinking, these are going to set me up and I'm going to be satisfied all of the days of my life. And then just as you're ready to retire, they change the rules. Just when you think you're ready to retire, you get sick. Just when you think you've got everything figured out. Money doesn't solve life. It's necessary. We need to have some. But what we really need is not money, but a correct attitude about life and about money. And so what the writer of Ecclesiastes talks about is, here's the foolishness. When we get all caught up in the money, and then it all goes south. What good is it, for example, to have money if you won't use it? What good does it do to have a bank full of money if you won't even spend enough to buy food for yourself? Every year, there's articles in our paper of people that have died homeless, in living in shacks, living without food, living without clothing, living without fixing up the problems and the plumbing. And then they go in and they find out later they had thousands upon thousands of dollars either in bank accounts or stuffed in a mattress, but they chose just to live in absolute poverty and degradation. The writer of Ecclesiastes saw this. Those that would hoard the money, that would get the money to their own hurt. We need to be conscious of what we spend, not frivolous with what God has allowed us to have. But at the same time, God expects us to use what we have, not only for ourselves, but for those that are around about us, and those that have need. So as you begin reading Ecclesiastes, what I'm amazed about is this. He set out to figure out life without looking at what God said about it. And you know what? On this issue, he figured it out. He took one look and he began saying, there's much more to life than money. There's much more to life than just trying to make more and more and more. Brethren, if we could adopt this philosophy, it would help us tremendously. Acknowledge what you have as a gift of God. And then use it as if it's a gift from God. And it's not yours, it's yours to use. It's not yours, it's yours to use to the very glory of God and for the very purposes of God. Now, the interesting thing also that I found with this is that after you've read this chapter, you then need to turn over to the New Testament, to the book of 1 Timothy chapter 6. And when you get to 1 Timothy chapter 6, he's actually going to quote from this chapter in the book of Ecclesiastes. And he picks up the same thought and the same attitude. You know, we're under a different covenant, but the attitude towards money hasn't changed. We're under a different law to God, but God still expects us to live, to have money, to have food and clothing and shelter. And so Paul talks about false teachers. And one of the things that he mentions about false teachers, 1 Timothy 6 and verse 5, the very end. They're deprived of the truth and they suppose that godliness is a means of great gain. I'm thoroughly disgusted with a lot of religion in America. A lot of TV preachers. And we've even dubbed a name onto their theology, and we call it the health and wealth gospel. And the interesting thing is that when they go out and they hold some of these big campaigns that they do, when you walk in to the parking lot of the campaign, what you do is you walk by row and row of broken down old cars until you get up to the reserved parking places for the preachers. And when you get to the reserved parking place for the preachers, they're very, very expensive cars. One preacher recently decided that he needed to have his own private jumbo jet because he was so busy preaching and teaching and traveling that he didn't have time to wait through the lines at an airport. He didn't have time to have to purchase a ticket on an airline. He was so important in his mind that he needed it. Really? Brethren, I'm going to fly the economy seat to China. And that's just fine. I always remember somebody said, back of the bus gets there same time the front. But you know, this is the mentality. That if I am this preacher of God, the preacher of the message, that then God will show through me. And so I get all this money and all these goods and all the material. That's simply not the message. Do y'all realize Jesus was poor? Do y'all realize the apostles were poor? Do y'all realize almost all of the first Christians you read about in the New Testament were poor? Not all of them, but a great number. So anybody that would take one look at the message of Jesus and think, Jesus is telling me, if I will just turn my life over to God, I'm going to become rich and famous, and you've misread the whole Bible. Paul does say this, verse 6, godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. There is a gain. It's not money, but a gain. And the gain of godliness is, are y'all ready for this? Godliness. The gain of being godly is you get to free yourself of all of the stuff that doesn't matter. You get to free your life and your mind of all of the clutter that turns our affections away from God, which does matter. And then Paul reminds us of what the Ecclesiastes writer said. And he said, for we brought nothing into this world. We cannot take anything out of it either. Wow. I know it's an old joke, but the man decided that he would save all of his money and he knew he was going to die. And so he went up into the attic and he stored all of the money up in the attic because he just knew when he died and he ascended up into heaven, he was just going to grab it on his way up. And the moment he's died, his wife ran up to the attic to see. And she took one look and it was still sitting there and she said, I told him to put it in the basement. But you know, he wouldn't have picked it up on his way down any more than he would pick it up on the way up. Because we don't take it with us. Somebody asked one time, a very rich person died, he said, how much did he leave? And he said, all of it. And that's what takes place. It dawned on me one day, I know what I'm going to take out of this world. My relationship to God. I'm going to leave my banjo, my piano, my computer, my wife, my kids, my friends. And you know, when we get to heaven, we will have missed none of that. And it will not matter. And so what the writer here wants us to see is the same thing that the writer of Ecclesiastes said. We brought nothing into this world and we take nothing of this world with us. We can only take our relationship with God. And if that be true, the next verse is the important one. He says, therefore, having food and covering, with these we shall be content. Everybody likes that verse in Philippians. I have learned in whatever state or condition that I am to be therewith content. We almost never quote the context that Paul said he had learned to be content in riches and in poverty. He had learned to be content when everything in life was going well and he was at ease, but he had learned to be content when he was persecuted and beaten and thrown in prison and hungry and naked and cold. Learning to be content is not about your circumstances. Learning to be content is learning to trust in God completely at all times. So learning to be content is the difference. In verse 9, he says, those who want to get rich fall into temptation and snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. And I'm absolutely amazed, brethren. We've done this, and the generation before us did this, and the generation before them did this. Jesus said, with how much difficulty those that are rich will enter into heaven. And we all try to prove Jesus wrong on that point. We all agree that that is true for you, but not for me. And that every other person in the world, riches is just going to be a problem for them. But not for me. I can handle it. You know, I've taken a look. I don't know whether you've ever done this or not, but a while back, somebody commented how much money a person makes in his lifetime. And I got thinking about that, because I never look at it that way. You know, I get a paycheck today and it's obligated. And we don't think about that. But I got going back and I just added up all of the money that has gone through my hands the years I've been preaching. And I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed that I spent it the way I spent it. I'm embarrassed that I wasn't thankful for what I have. I was embarrassed that even having this book and reaching this book and preaching this book, that I had missed so much about money. And I don't want you to feel guilty about it. That's what I said at the beginning. What I want you to realize is every dime we get, every penny we get, consider it a gift from God and to be used in this life, to live a life that is godly. A life that glorifies God. Now, having said that, verse 10. Those that want to be rich are going to have all kinds of problems. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil. And some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many a pang. One time, one of the brothers walked in some years ago, and we were talking, and he was just buoyant that morning. And I could tell he was just on cloud nine, as we would say. And I said, something good happened in your life. What happened? He says, I got a raise. I got a big raise. God blessed me with even more money than I had before. And I had to ask the obvious question, was that God blessing you or the devil tempting you? Was God actually giving you more money than you needed? Or is that Satan's way of trying to draw you away from faithfulness? I don't have an answer for that question, by the way. I'm not sure there is an answer to that question. The real answer is not where did it come from? But what are you going to do with it? And the problem is when we want, it's the want that gets us in trouble. It's the desire that leads many astray. It is the love of the money that causes the problems in one's life. And so if we could take the right attitude towards money, it's neither good nor bad. It's how I use it. It's how I think about it. And the Ecclesiastes writer was absolutely correct. It's a gift from God. Let us learn to use it as a gift from God. Now, verse 17. Instruct those who are rich. First time I read that, I had to stop just like I did now, right in the middle of the sentence. Because I had got this impression that everybody that becomes a Christian was in poverty. And it's just not true. In fact, what you see is, Paul understood that there were some Christians that were rich in this world. That's what it says. And they didn't tell them, you have to get rid of that money, it's dirty. What he said was, tell those that are rich in this present world not to be conceited. Money does that to us. We that are the haves versus those that are the have-nots. We that don't understand how difficult life is for some become conceited. We have a number of people that are part of our church family. And I'm not naming names, but I'm going to tell you, they live on the edge. A missed day at work can mean the difference between food or no food for the week. A missed day at work can mean the difference between paying your rent or not paying your rent. And you just hope beyond hope that you don't have a flat tire because there simply is not extra money to fix a flat tire. We have. And what happens is sometimes we that have money become very conceited and very arrogant, and we talk about those people that don't put stuff away for a rainy day. They don't have it to put away. There are those that simply because of life, whether it be lack of opportunity or mistakes that they have made earlier in life, they simply don't have. Lazarus and the rich man, you already went there, didn't you? Lazarus didn't have. The rich man had and wouldn't share. And so there are those that are like Lazarus. But whatever else you want to say about Lazarus, and I wished I knew more about Lazarus and what he did. When he died, he went to Abraham's bosom. He was approved of God. He was accepted by God. I don't know how he did that in poverty, but I'm going to tell you what. The rich man didn't do it. And so Paul said, instruct those that are rich that they be not conceited or to fix their hope upon the uncertainty of riches, but upon God. When the stock market crashed back in our 20s, they have videos of some of these men jumping out of windows and committing suicide. You know, there's things worse than losing all of your money. One of them is dying and going to hell. Far, far worse. But my point on this is, if you fixed all of your hope and all of your life upon money, and then you lose it, you lost life. You lost the reason to live. You've lost everything about joy and happiness. If money is not your life, even if you lose it, you still have your life. You still have your love. You still have your purpose. You still have God in your life. So he said, warn those that are rich. Brethren, we are rich. You've been warned. You need to be careful. Fix your hope upon God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. But instruct them, that is, instruct those that are rich, to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous, to be ready to share what we have. I don't want you to be guilty. I want you to be godly. I don't want you to be poor. I want you to be prudent. I don't want you to be scared. I want you to be confident that God has blessed me because I'm going to use this for the glory of God. Ecclesiastes is a wonderful book. It's got some interesting chapters in it. And this is just one of those that just grabs you once you realize how much God has really blessed. I want you to just stop and think about it. Funny things, my parents are moving from their house into a retirement private house that there's theirs. And every time I talk with my mother, she says, I can't believe we've saved all this junk. And my first statement is, make sure you give it away because I don't want to have to do it. Because I know one of these days they will both die. And my brother and I will have to take care of you. You all have been through this. My brother and I have not been through this. But we will. And what do? With 19 antique clocks. What do you do with 7 guitars and 5 amps? What do you do with 10,391 ladybugs? I don't know. I hope I don't have to find out. I hope they've used them and have enjoyed the life out of them. But I hope when they die godly, having used and enjoyed what God gave them for life. And if we can do that, we've been a success. Whether we die as penniless as Lazarus, or whether we die one of God's rich believers, let us live to the glory of God. Think about what you have. Give thanks for it. Enjoy what you have. But use it to the glory of God. That's your whole life. If you're here this morning and you've not dedicated your life to Jesus, you need to decide, I am going to be a follower of Jesus. Even in the difficult teachings about money, I am going to believe and trust Jesus and do what He has said. And what He has said is this, you need to believe in Me, repent, and be baptized for the remission of your sins. And if you've never done that, that's where you start. You don't start with the money part, you start with your life. You first give your life to Jesus. If you're willing, we invite you to come as together we stand and as we sing. Yeah.